Welcome to the How Soccer Explains Leadership podcast, where we explore leadership principles through the lens of the beautiful game.
Welcome back to How Soccer Explains Leadership. Thanks again for being a part of the conversation. I'm Phil Dark, your host, and with me is my brother, my co-host, Paul Jobson. Paul, how you doing, man?
Phil, doing great, man. Good to be back on the pod and talking with you, of course, video to video, face to face, as close as we can get. But things are going good, man. Since the last time we talked, I took the Samford women's soccer team to Costa Rica as part of our Warrior Way Gifts programming and built some relationships down there. So that was just an amazing, amazing trip that I'm sure we'll get to dive into at some point. But just an amazing trip. Saw God open some really cool doors with our partners in Costa Rica. So that's the latest. While I was there, my kids were out camping in Big Bend with their mom and some friends. So we split ways. Both had great trips, but now back to the grind after spring break of back to work and soccer and Warrior Way started up, and we are rolling, man. It's a nice time. How about you, buddy? What's been going on?
Yeah, you know, it's been crazy. It was fun to watch. I just kind of saw on Todd's, I don't know if it was Facebook or Instagram, whatever it was, just saw some pictures and then it was really cool too, because I've also been traveling, but domestically was out in Georgia, and that was one of the cool things. Folks, don't underestimate the power of connecting people with people and just having a conversation with somebody and asking the next question. And because while Paul was in Costa Rica, I was at my daughter's YWAM graduation, where she came back from Brazil and with her team. One of the girls was from Costa Rica, and she was saying how she had a dream while she was in Brazil about doing ministry in Costa Rica with soccer. And I said, really, where? You know, I know it's a relatively big country, but what's the city you're looking at doing it in? And she said the city, and I forget it now. Paul would remember it because he was there. That's where he was doing the ministry, and it was basically what she was looking to do is what they were doing. And so I actually connected him on the spot, and, you know, who knows what God's going to do with that. But it was super cool. I was like, what the heck? It was really one of those cool things. And so I was able to spend some great time. My daughter, Savannah, picked her up, and we got to go hang out in Savannah while we were in Georgia. So that was kind of a cool little bucket list item for her. And it was a great time with my bride and my daughter. And then I actually was able to had a great North American Sport Movement gathering down in LA at the, just so happened it was the YWAM LA base. It's not a YWAM thing, but they hosted us. So it was like a YWAM month for me. But Youth with a Mission, for those of you who don't know what YWAM is. So it's been great. It's been a great month. It's been crazy, crazy, crazy with my dad and all the stuff going on there. So that's been exhausting. But had some really, really cool things go on, and the movement stuff was really neat. And a little gift we got to do at the end. We got to go to Universal Studios, and I hadn't been there since I was a kid. And so some of the studio tour was the same. Jaws still came out and scared me. Spoiler alert for those of you who haven't been there, Jaws might come out and get you. But anyway, so yeah, it's been great. I'm excited for today. We have a great guest. We have Brock Thompson from South Dakota State University. He has had tremendous success there. You can go read his bio. We're going to talk about, get into a little bit of story and everything else. But most recently, he was honored with the FCA Leighton Shoemaker Award, which goes to someone who is glorifying God on and off the field. And, you know, after reading what Brock's been doing, I'm excited to get into this conversation. So, Brock, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I'm sitting here in Brookings and it's a snow day, you know, which is crazy for some people to recognize that it's March and there's white stuff flying around in parts of the country that we live in. But great to be with you both.
Yeah, Paul and I definitely do not have a snow day today.
No, it's a rain day today. But when you said snow, I kind of got nervous a little bit. You know, I don't do the cold weather very well. But hey, somebody's got to live there, right? We can't all live in the warm weather area. So I appreciate you, Brock, for being one of those who can tough it out and live in the cold weather states.
Yeah, you know, some years are harder than others. And, you know, February teased us here. We were training outside and now we're back inside. But, you know, you take it as it comes.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny because typically we have the Waco weather report, but we did not have that this episode. And you brought the weather report
from
South Dakota. I stuck it in. Yeah, you did.
It's raining.
You did sneak it in afterwards.
It's raining. But it'll be 75 later. Just it'll be nice and dry for Warrior Way this afternoon. So there you go. I don't want to let anybody down there.
I like it. So I think we've all kind of had the spring tease, you know, where it was a few days. We had that same thing, 75, 80, perfect weather. And then now it's back down in the super cold down here in California, 60s and in the 40s. So, you know, I don't know how we're doing it. I don't know how we're making it, but we're going to push through and we're going to make it here in California. But Brock, you know, we always love to share. We always just love to have our guests share their story. Just, you know, like I talked about the bios on paper. You know, they can do a little bit for you to get to know somebody, but not really. So we just love hearing, you know, how just your story, how you got to where you are today, how you developed your passion for soccer, for coaching, for leadership, and how you did it up at South Dakota State coaching and having tremendous success there.
Yeah, I'm happy to share. We could probably, you know, if we dive deep into it, we could fill this whole episode with that story. I'm incredibly blessed to be here at South Dakota State. And you know, and God has blessed me really through opportunity, but also some trials. And I got my collegiate coaching start in Bismarck, North Dakota at the University of Mary. And I distinctly remember, you know, being in my senior year of college and changing my major from a healthcare related major, which was, which was nursing to biology education, because I felt called to coach. I coached a JV team that spring season. I remember very distinctly feeling that calling. But the early years of my coaching very much was filled with an extension of my playing days. And looking back on it, it's easy to start to label what some of those years were like. I would say very much were more transactional than transformational from that. You know, even we had success at the University of Mary, which was an NAIA program at the time. And I remember, you know, I left to be a graduate assistant in Indiana State, and you know, very much left it and really felt unappreciated there a little bit. And I think as I worked through that in my time, I realized that was maybe more of a, you know, more of a wound that I was needing to deal with versus really what was happening. But ended up at the University of North Dakota as a head coach for 3 seasons and, you know, went to the NCAA tournament, beat the number one team in the country the first year. And by the end of year 3, my contract was renewed. And so that's the coaching profession that we live in. But that's also the time where, you know, God really met me at that difficult time. And really, you know, there's the whole story in my testimony that revolves around that. But really what it came down to is he said, I called you to coach, but you're not doing it the way that glorifies me. And Lang Wiedemeyer at South Dakota State in 2008 gave me an opportunity to work for him. And it was the greatest thing ever. I worked for an incredibly Christian leader, you know, modeled what it meant to be a good father, a good husband. And I was in an athletic department that was filled by those people. Our football coach here was the same way. Our men's basketball coach here was the same way. And worked with Lang until he left for Liberty University after the 2016 season and was blessed to be elevated at that time. But, you know, it's those opportunities and trials that have really shaped me. And, you know, I'm a much different coach now than I was, you know, in the early 2000s. And I hope in 10 years, I'll be a much different coach then than I am now. So that's a little bit of the roundabout way of how I ended up here at South Dakota State. And certainly, you know, as we get into this conversation, you're welcome to poke and prod in any direction that you guys want to go.
Yeah. And we typically aren't shy about poking and prodding. And so definitely I would love to hear more about that. That North Dakota, you said it's a, you know, big part of your testimony, and I'd love to go a little bit deeper into that.
Sure. So I was up there. It was the end of the third season. It had been a difficult year. And anybody that's worked at a smaller college knows you kind of, sometimes you get this call of like admissions wants you to meet with, you know, just a general student that's interested in soccer. And Usually that is somebody that doesn't have a whole lot of soccer ability to help your team, but you try to put on a good face. And it was really the first weekend after the season. I remember doing it with not a lot of, you know, not having a whole lot of motivation to do it. But I ran into a friend of mine who was the director of FCA during that visit for the state of North Dakota. And he kept talking about this book from Tony Dungy called Quiet Strength. And, you know, I was giving him a tour of the hockey arena there, and he said, you got to read this book. And, you know, and when he left, he actually gave me a copy out of his car and said, you got to read this book. And the next week I start reading this book, and by, you know, the end of the week, I'm meeting with the athletic director, and They informed me my contract won't be renewed. And that book was almost like a playbook of Tony Dungy getting fired from the Buccaneers and going on with that. And I remember sitting in my condo after that happened and reading that book in the Bible verse at the next chapter was Jeremiah 29:11. And it was an emotional time. I remember just, you know, that just hit differently during that time. I pull open the FCA coach's Bible to the devotion that's at the back of that chapter and the back of the Bible, and the same Bible verse on November 9th was Jeremiah 29:11. And I remember thinking, you know, what am I going to do? But that gave me a sense. And so at this time, you know, tears are running down my face. I'm walking around my condo and I look up on the mantle of my fireplace and there's a little sailboat figurine that has kind of a backstory. And, you know, my grandmother would always do a grab bag Christmas for us grandkids. And I remember this because I was probably 12 or 13 and I got a sailboat figurine. All my cousins got like toys or sports stuff. And I got a sailboat figurine. That was like a piece of coal to a 12-year-old. And I remember my mom saying, "What are you going to do with your Christmas present?" And I said, "I just want to throw it away." And she said, "Well, throw it in your desk drawer. You know, one day you're going to have a house and you're going to want to fill this." And so I just remember how upset I was at that Christmas present. And, you know, and I remember my grandmother saying, "Oh, I'm so glad you got that one." And I'm thinking, like, why are you glad I got this? Like, that's the worst gift in the whole, you know, pile. And so I'm walking around my apartment. I 3 months had been living there, and my parents brought up a box of stuff, and one of the things was a sailboat figurine. My mom sent it on the mantle, and I'm looking at that sailboat figurine, and it's got on the sail, it's got Jeremiah 29:11. And I just remember during that time feeling so secure in a time of uncertainty in my life that it just is not explainable to me. And I just felt the security of saying, "God, like, this is what I've called you to do. You're not doing it the way that I want you to do it. I've got you, but you got to trust me." From that. And it took about 6 months, and Lang gave me an opportunity to join his staff at South Dakota State. And that's how I've ended up here. But it was, you know, not an easy thing to go through, but I wouldn't change it for the world. And it certainly would, in a weird way, the biggest blessing that I've been given for sure.
Yeah, it's crazy how sometimes that happens, right? Moment, in that blip, we're like, "Man, what's this going to turn? How can this turn out for good?" And then,
right,
looking back, we go, "Man, that's really cool." Even a sailboat at 12-year-old birthday Christmas or 12-year-old Christmas from grandma, you know, that's cool. I love it. I just cleaned out my mom and dad's house and saw a lot of those little things that you look back on and go, "Man, that's just a really cool thing that in the moment I didn't think anything of." And now I'm going, "Man, that's just really special." So I love that. Love that story.
Yeah, definitely cool on God's timing of things too, right? The insignificant things that he makes significant, that were always significant, that you just don't know about until he needs them to be there, right? So that's really cool. I appreciate you sharing that. During your time, Brock, did you ever coach on the guy's side, or is it always on the girl's side?
Yeah, so my first year, I was a student assistant at the University of Mary as I finished up my eligibility with the men's program. So I played and had one more year of school, and then jumped to the girl side and have been there kind of ever since.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's no real reason to ask. I was just curious, you know, as guys, sometimes we usually start, you know, me too. My first college session was with the team that I played for, right? I was in a second or third assistant or whatever. And then girls from then on out. So, but Brock, you know, you tell a little bit about your story and it's awesome how God has worked through your life to this point, will continue to, but how would you define, you know, your personal why? What's your life purpose, and how would you say you're living that out?
Well, it's changed obviously after that story and that moment that I talked about, but really there's nothing more gratifying than seeing people, young people, embrace growth and the joy that comes along with that, and helping people understand that they're more capable of what, you know, of what they believe they are. And I just remember, you know, any moment you see somebody experience pure joy is a really, like, that's the why, right? Could be a little kid that's learning how to ride a bike that figures it out. It could be, you know, it could be a moment on a soccer field. It could be, you know, for us, it could be somebody that gets into nursing school, which is a really competitive program here, or pharmacy school. But just really helping people grow and understand that they're capable of far more than what they think they are, what we all think they are, it is really what, you know, is really the reason why I coach.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think that's, you know, when we get to the heart of, you know, I think why a lot of us initially get into coaching may not always be for the right reason, but I'll say this before I get into that, you know, not the only guest who said, yeah, I think my why has changed over my life. I mean, I think that's been a pretty consistent statement on this podcast. And I love that, honestly, because I think it shows, you know, we as people, we need to continue to grow and develop and go the way God wants us to go. And he can change our life, you know, will change our life. But that idea of, you know, experiencing joy. And you know, I remember when my kids were babies, I would record them laughing because it was just so like just the joy of whatever they were experiencing. Who knows, maybe their stomach ache went away and they were just laughing, who knows, or they got I tickled them, or but just hearing that joy from the little kids to, like you said, like watching your players, you know, maybe someone who's not on a scholarship who gets a scholarship, or they get into, like you said, nursing school. One of my former players just texted me yesterday. She just graduated from the Academy for Secrets, the Secret Service Academy or something like that. You know, I'm like, I don't even know what that is, but it sounds really cool. It's way high up, and I'll probably never know anything she ever does again now that she's got into the Secret Service. But just those moments of joy that a former player would reach out and go, hey, coach, I want you to hear about this. You know, I love that because, again, not about the X's and O's, right? But about how are we, you know, pouring into these people, and the fact they want to share that joy with you, Brock, I think is a true testament to, you know, you living out the why that God has in front of you. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, 100%. That is so cool. There's nothing better for a coach, right, than to have someone come back later, and whether it's sharing that, like Paul, you've talked in the past about getting invited to weddings and getting baby announcements and just being a part of their lives. And, you know, and that's something as a high school coach, probably not as common, but it does happen. And when it does, it's just really, it's special. Cause that's when your why is to really influence people and to, you know, mine is to help others flourish and make good things great. And to be, when you see that is part of their story, it's just really, it's really cool. So, but that does take investment. It does take time. It does take having your why be a lot more than about what goes on the field and W's and L's and what that is and so on and so forth. So, you know, and that goes to our next question. You know, we did mention at the outset of the show, this FCA's Leighton Shoemaker Award, and a lot of people probably have never heard of it, whatever, but it is a big deal that when FCA gives this award out every year at the United Soccer Coaches Convention. And Leighton Shoemaker was he's just an incredible coach out at Messiah College, impacted so many lives. And it really does. We give it to people who are influencing and glorifying God on and off the field. And so I just want to talk to you a little bit about that. You know, a lot of coaches struggle with incorporating their faith into their coaching. What does that look like? And I'd just love to hear from you how you see coaching as a ministry, and how you can incorporate your faith, and how you do incorporate your faith into your coaching.
You know, I think the first thing is, I think as Christians, we're called to live, right? And we're not called to, like, we're called to live out our faith and to make disciples. And so I think there's a lot of people that you can talk in a lot of ways about, well, what does it look like in this section of your life? Or what does it look like in your profession or your marriage or your relationships or that? And I think, you know, ever since I lived through having my contract not renewed in North Dakota, there was almost that almost dissipated the fear that journey of, like, during that time, I was probably trying to coach to make other people happy, my athletic director, you know, that sort of thing. And so now what it looks like is I just, you're called to live out your faith. And so what does it look like? It means loving people, right? It means not being ashamed of that. And so you could do a whole section on what does it look like to coach with love with the people that you're entrusted to. And, you know, our FCA guy here at South Dakota State told me this once. He said, you know, the word coach, it goes all the way back to stagecoach, which means that you are transporting people of importance from point A to point B. And you think about that. Do you, as a coach, do you view the people that you're entrusted in as people of importance? I think that's the first step. And then are you helping them on their journey from point A to point B? And point B for everybody in our team may look really different. We have people that may pursue professional soccer, you know, but we have people that may be awesome moms or teachers or nurses or whatever it may be. But it all goes back to, do you view them, you know, as children of God, and you treat them that way, and you love them that way? And sometimes that means tough love from that. But I think for me, you know, I hope that it's just who I am and not, you know, and not something I try to do to incorporate faith into our program and do. We have some things in our program that have developed over time. Like our players have a player-led Bible study. We pray before every game. That's a player-led thing. That faith very much is a part of our program here at South Dakota State. But we also want it to feel open and welcome to everybody. And we want it to just be who we are, not necessarily something that we try to do.
No, I love that. And I totally agree. I mean, you look at, you know, the verse and all that you do, whether in eating or drinking or, you know, do it all for the glory of God, right? And so that idea of, and I had one of my son's friends actually visit us over spring break, and there's soccer players down at Biola, and he asked me the question. He goes, do you think, like, you know, can being a banker be a calling from God? Can being something just a regular job, quote unquote, you know, outside of it? I go, absolutely. I go, the secular divide is a man-made thing. You know, we are to do whatever we do for the glory of God, and that means living it out. It does. And our, you know, number one calling is to make disciples. And so what does that look like? It means living with and walking alongside and encouraging and loving and, you know, and yes, sharing why we do it and sharing what is our motivation for that and being a big part of that. What does that look like? It is different for each kid as well, young adult, wherever you're at. So I love hearing that. Obviously, you know, we talked with Patrick Gilliam at Wheaton about some of his strategies and some of the things that he's doing. And yes, there are those things as well. Like you said, you can do the things, and hopefully we are having Bible studies. We are coming together and doing different things, but you know, that at a public school, you gotta be a bit careful as well on what some of these things you do as a coach. But to be able to live it out, to be able to let them know why you do what you do and who you are, that's something anyone can do. So I love hearing that. Love hearing how you're able to do that.
Yeah, we had a situation, and I remember it really vivid. We had a player get hurt, and I just remember feeling prompted to like pray with this player during this time. And the first time I'd ever done that, you know, one-on-one during that time. And, you know, I remember feeling that. I remember wrestling with that. Or for what you talked about, I remember saying, well, gosh, like, you know, does this go over that kind of quote unquote secular line of going too far, right? Like from that. And I just remember, and so I just kind of stepped out and I said, you know, Harley, can I pray for you? And, you know, and did that. And years later, she talks about how that moment was a really key moment in her transformation in her faith. Yeah. And she has since led her family to Christ and some of those things. And you think, gosh, what if I would have ignored that? Like, what if I would have ignored that? You know? And so for me, I just, you know, the more, you always have those things that you could say, well, I can't do that. But what that really says is I don't want to do that. And so I just think, you know, the more and more I do this, I just try to really, really listen to that prompting. And some of the best decisions I've ever made have come what the Holy Spirit's prompting me to do, even if what I really want to do is something else.
Like, we can all relate with that.
Yeah. And you know, I love the direction this conversation is going, because I think that, you know, we had an opportunity to coach at a, you know, at a public school before we went to Baylor, which obviously is a faith-based school. It's different, right? Like you have the freedom at a faith-based institution to speak a little bit more freely. You're even encouraged, you know, to do that. But at a public school, at a state school, it can be a little bit different. But, you know, the fact that you leaned into that prompting and in some ways you just kind of went for it, you know, you trusted the Lord and like, okay, I think this is what I'm supposed to do. So God, you're in control, right? But I loved our brothers and sisters like you that are in these public schools and these public school settings, you know, they're still incorporating their faith into what they're doing. What would you say, you know, or how would you explain how your faith at your school in your current situation, how has it led to, you know, how has it kind of incorporated itself into the success of what you're doing? Obviously, faith in the Lord, all of those things, but can you dive into that a little bit more? We've talked briefly just kind of around the edges, sure, of what some of those things look like, but can you dive into that a little bit more, what that kind of looks like for you and your team?
I mean, as my faith has deepened, I think it's aligned my priorities in a way that allow for success. I think sometimes when coaches and programs really struggle, they put too much of an emphasis on success of sport at that time. And so I think, you know, scripture is filled with a lot of like little self-talk phrases that we can use as coaches and as people. And one of them that has been vital for me is, you know, rejoice when you face trials and temptations of any kind. And you all know as coaches, we can face trials and temptations every day of the week, right? I mean, it could be a player getting injured. It could be a loss. It could be, you know, it could be a recruit saying no. Whatever it may be from that. And so I think that what my faith has done is allowed me to lean on some of those things and say, you know, even when I'm feeling defeated or feeling like we should have won that game, or the team isn't as connected as they need to be, it's allowed me to put my trust in what God is working on now. And, you know, and it allows me to shift from why is this happening to me or to us? Okay. Or why is this happening for me or for us during that time? And when you stretch it outside that moment and truly trust what God's doing, even if that goes beyond a season, you know, or beyond that, it dissipates some of that fear, dissipates some of that disappointment. It allows you to recalibrate and to focus on leading through challenging times from that. And so I think that that's probably the biggest thing of how faith has allowed us to be successful here is we don't get hung up on trials and temptations that all of a sudden can derail you, and it can go sideways, and it can go really sideways really fast.
Yeah. And I think in there too is, I think, you know, see sometimes, you know, I think just your conviction and your faith and your beliefs, strong beliefs that, you know, can guide you through whatever. I think sometimes we have as coaches, we can question it, kind of go back and forth, right? Like, is this the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? Is this the right time? Kind of back to your point of praying for your player at that time. I think as coaches, we can ebb and flow, as any of us do in any of our careers, whether we're, you know, bringing God into everything that we do, right? And kind of back to your point, Phil, of the person you were talking to, hey, we're taking God into everything that we do. It's not like you just have to be a preacher or a minister or a missionary or whatever. But I think maybe some encouragement for some of our coaches out there that are Christians, maybe not in a Christian environment, even they find themselves maybe alone, you know, where do they find that, that support? And I'm sure Brock, you've probably got a great team of support around you too, that encourages you and accountability. What does that look like for you?
It's been really critical to have a community where you feel like, I mean, as a coach, it can be depleting, probably like no other. I think all coaches would say that. I have two kind of weekly community groups that are really important to me. My Wednesday FCA coaches Bible studies are really important time in the middle of the week, just to hit pause and kind of be able to kind of get away from the week and just recharge. And then I go to our leadership group with a bunch of business leaders on Sunday mornings before church. Those two community groups are just vital. Oftentimes as coaches, you're pouring into people, whether you're players, you've got to find a source of community that's pouring into you too. I think that's vital. That's been really vital for me, where if my schedule allows, it like causes me to miss those for a week or two, I feel really low as far as just energy, just the source of what I have to give out during that time.
Yeah, that's huge. And I appreciate you speaking into that a little bit, because I think we sometimes can lose sight. You're right. As a coach, as a college coach or coach at really any level, it can be a lonely place, a head coach. Right. And just reminding everybody to keep, you're pouring out your cup. You got to find ways to, can't pour out an empty cup. It's already empty. Right. So keep finding ways to fill your cup. So that's some great stuff.
Yeah. That goes to anything really. I mean, wherever, any leadership position, you know, you're talking about pastors earlier, you're talking about what leader, when you're leading something, a lot of times everyone just assumes you got all your ducks in a row and you got to figure it out and you can do it. No problem. And sometimes you start believing it. Right. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I don't need that input. I got it. I got it figured out. And, you know, it's a sign of weakness for some people to say, I need other people. Right. So I just want to encourage people out there, you know, make sure you're surrounding yourself with people that care about you, that know you as well as you know yourself, or better. Sometimes when you're kind of in this delusional world, that they'll call you out of it, for people who will be able to challenge you, for people who will be able to speak truth into you, for people that will be able to make you better, right? So that's something that a lot of leaders don't do, because either they think it is a sign of weakness or they don't want that challenging. They want to just be able to do whatever they want to do and do it how they want to do it. And it will not only make you a better person, it'll make you a better leader, it'll make you better in all that you do if you are seeking out that mentorship, that brotherhood, that sisterhood, you know, for those of you who are out there. You know, to be able to have that is not only something that will add and be kind of a cool thing, but it's critical to long-term longevity, not burning out, not just hitting a wall. So yeah, love that. Love, you know, it's a lot of reason why we do this show, is to be able to hear how people are doing that, to hear, to continually remind us that we need these things in our lives, to be able to remind us that this game is more than a game. And that's something I think a lot of people forget sometimes, when we're just going, well, I can just keep doing the right drills. I can just keep doing the right things. I can just keep doing it, just hitting the grind. And then you burn out because you just don't have that support, encouragement. And, you know, again, you need people in your life to tell you when you're wrong. You need people in your life to tell you when you're doing something that just is not good for you. And so that typically only people who are doing life with us that we trust, that have actually earned that conversation. So we need to earn that conversation with our players, and we need to allow people to earn that conversation with us.
Yeah, for sure. Brock, let's transition now a little bit. Let's go back into the way back machine, the time machine a little bit in your career. Was there a defining moment as a player, like, that you can think back to that kind of affected maybe how you coach now, or how you lead your teams, or it's really affected your leadership style? Just as a player, was there a defining moment?
That's a really good question. There's a few defining moments as far as players go. I think that, you know, so much of my playing days, as I've reflected back on, much of my motivation was to perform with the idea that it would lead to kind of approval or acceptance, whether those are with peers or, you know, from that standpoint. And so that's what drove me a lot. That's something that, you know, it took some working through later. But a specific moment I remember, you know, just, this was high school soccer, probably one of my first coaching mentors. We had a coach. His name is Todd Wick, Blair High School, Nebraska. And we were, the state of Nebraska was all one school, like all one class. And so we were essentially a Class B school that was playing, you know, one of the smallest schools there. And we made it all the way to the state final. In the state semifinal, we beat Creighton Prep, which was essentially you know, the preparatory school of Creighton University, like really the soccer high school powerhouse and in Nebraska. And I remember that game really just speaking life into me, like anything is really possible and anything is, you know, belief is really important. And what I really remember from Coach Wick is two things. There was never any, he was a man that was always filled with belief and confidence that we could be successful. And the other thing that I remember a great deal about is he always addressed us as a team as gentlemen. Always started any team address as gentlemen. And I can tell you when I was a ninth grader or 10th grader or 11th grader at Blair High School, I was not a gentleman. I was probably far from it. But I think back to that time of really showing what's possible with belief, but also just how I felt to be respected by a coach at that level, just by the way that he carried himself and the way that he addressed the team during that time.
Yeah, you know, So you just brought me back to when I was coaching a team that went and won state when they had no business winning state, and talking to some of those kids 10, 20 years later and here and there, I was just like, I hope that they have similar stories and they're telling that story of how this, you know, law student coach, you know, spoke something into them. But I don't know that that's the case, but I just remember looking, you know, when you have those moments where you do things that you're like, there is no way. I mean, unseeded team coming in, knocking off the number one team in the state. You know, it's like, what the heck? How does that happen? You know, that 16 seed, you're on March Madness right now, coming in and beating a one seed. And those are things that people talk about. But the impact, you don't think about the impact it has on the player and their life and other things they're doing later on when they're over, you know, how can we overcome the odds and whatever it may be. You know, it could be a job. It could be a cancer diagnosis. It could be a, you know, other things so as coaches, don't underestimate that moment, right? Don't underestimate what, you know, how you can speak into it to not just make it about the sport and not just make it about the win, but to be able to encourage them in life in that regard as well. And so you've mentioned a few coaches or a couple coaches anyway, in this episode. You know, you mentioned Coach Wick, Coach Lang, who, you know, good friends of, you know, Paul and myself as well. And be able to get to know Lang over the last few years and I'm so much better for it. But, you know, is there one coach that you know, you played for or coached with that kind of stands out from the rest and kind of what set him or her apart from the rest?
Yeah, you know, my college coach was Coach Ripley. He's retired. And so I went to the University of Mary. He was, and I remember this in my recruiting conversation. I played on the inaugural team there. And I remember one of my real concerns was, like, how competitive or how good is a first year team going to be from that? And I just remember asking Coach Rip, and he hadn't coached a college program before. He was a local guy in Bismarck. And I remember asking him, I said, Coach, I said, if I were to come here, like how good are we going to be? And what I expected him to say was, oh, you know, we're putting together a really good team. We'll be like, you know, coach speak today. And what he said was, I don't know. I've recruited what I think are really good players, but I don't have a reference. And I just remember that. It's the reason why I went there, because you knew that if he was going to be honest with you in that moment, when he was trying to recruit you to play for him, that he was going to be honest with me during moments when he was coaching me from that. And so I think just the ability to talk candidly, you know, and openly and honestly and vulnerably, that Coach Rip talked to me and to all of the people that he coached has always stuck with me. And it stuck with me to the standpoint of, you know, we've all been across the table from somebody that is told you what they think you want to hear. And it just prevents relationships from diving deeper, right? From that. And if we're honest with ourselves, we've probably also been that person that has told somebody what they want to hear. But when you have that level of authenticity and vulnerability, and you have the courage to do it, even when it's hard, or even when it may cost you, it really endears people to somebody. And so I'm grateful for Coach Rip at the University of Mary. And that's the biggest thing. And, you know, and our football coach who just retired here at South Dakota State, Coach Stiglmeyer, was very much the same way, very much the same way. And so those two things were really important in my coaching journey. And really the journey of going from, you know, being transactional and being the coaching really about the extension of my playing days and a little bit about my ego to hopefully transformational in my players' lives and hopefully building something that goes far beyond the soccer field.
Yeah, that's so good. That's so good. And I love hearing that the most influential coach is a guy who is just honest.
Right.
Right. And said, I don't know when he didn't know.
Right.
And that's something that's such a great leadership lesson is saying, I don't know is the best answer you can give when you don't know.
Right.
Like there's no other, that is the right answer. And right. And what I don't know says is, you know, it could just mean I don't know and I don't care. And but you know that when that's the answer. But if it's I don't know, but you know, let's find out together or right. Let's figure it out together. Let's go. I'll go find the answer for you. And if I can find the answer or let's go do this and see how good we can make this team. You know, let's answer this question together. And so that is something that a great leader is able to convey. And the answer, I don't know. A lot of people think it's, again, it goes back to what we talked about earlier, that sign of weakness, right? It's like, oh, I don't know. And then everyone's going to think you're incompetent or something. No, it's, I don't know is it builds trust.
Right.
When you're sitting there and you're going, oh, wow. Okay. You know, and again, if it's an, I don't know with the, but let's find out together on the other side of it. You know, even as a parent, I see that with my kids where they ask a question, I'm like, I don't know, but hey, we got this internet thing. Let's go see if we can figure out an answer. Or I don't know if you can make it pro, but hey, I know the things that it takes to get there.
Right.
And I know the things that you're going to need to do. And if you're not doing them, then I can probably give you that answer. But if you want it, let's go after it and let's figure this out together. Right. So as a coach, I love hearing that as one of the best things you could ever heard out of a coach's mouth. I absolutely love, especially given the other coaches that you mentioned as well, that was what stood out.
Right.
I think, Paul, you ever say, I don't
yeah,
know?
I can always appreciate the, I don't know, especially when you're asked to predict the future. You know, I think that's where, you know, it's like the question to the coach was, you know, how good are we going to be? Like he didn't know. Nobody knew, right? You can't predict the future. And I think that's I love the honesty there. Of, hey, this is what I'm trying to do. This is what I'm trying to build. This is how I'm trying to build it. You know, come in here, get your fingerprints on this and let's do it together. There's no greater motivation, I think, than that. Like, okay, well, all right, let's go. So yeah, I love that. Brock, through your coaching career, playing career, I mean, you've seen the game. We've all seen the game go through just a ton of different transitions and ideas. And people have, you know, we live in a huge country where we all have a million different ideas about the game, how it should be played, how it shouldn't be played. All of those things. What, just kind of through your career, I'd love to hear just your thoughts on, you know, what are some really good things we're doing in this country for the game of soccer? Maybe what are some things that maybe we need to be doing a little bit better when it comes to, you know, development or the just the game in whole? What are things that strike you when I say things like that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think as far as the game goes, I think the exposure of the game at the biggest level is as bright as it's ever been. I think we all three of us probably remember watching the 94 World Cup or the 99 World Cup and, you know, and that shone the light of soccer to people who weren't exposed to it before. Well, we now live in a country that it's exposed at a level that's much, much brighter. And so you can find it more often. You can see it more often. It's publicized more often, both the good and the bad and everything that goes along with it. And so I think, you know, the growth from that standpoint has helped development, has helped people want to be a part of it as far as that, both at the highest levels, high level college, club and professionally, but also at the grassroots level from that as they see those people. As far as the other side of it, what are some challenges? I think, you know, what makes America great is what is really the challenge in youth sport. And that's that we live in a country, that values free enterprise. And because it values free enterprise, what is happening is it's becoming more and more costly for most players to play at higher and higher levels. And, you know, and I think that that's a really, really big challenge. When you start to look at soccer in other countries, the better you are in most other countries, the cheaper or more profitable it becomes for you and the family. Where here we live in a society that it's really kind of the other way around from that. And that's not a sustainable model from that. You know, I have a niece and nephew that play club soccer in the Minneapolis area, and it's a real challenge for them from that. And it used to be that there were kind of some multiple like pathways where you felt like there was a local option versus a regional or national option. And it feels more and more like the only options are the most expensive national pathways. And that doesn't, you know, that doesn't matter which league you're talking about, because they all now have national programming, nationwide programming. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we face from a structure standpoint. I think from a pure player standpoint, I think a lot of, you know, more and more players are playing games that really are just they're just showcases. They're just games. And so the ability to play the game with a different level of emotion has changed a little bit. You know, 15 years ago, I loved going and watching like state cup semifinals and finals games because the emotion that's to that. And the reality of it is players don't play enough of those games that have some of that true passion really attached to it. You know, they play too many games with just their families on the sidelines, and, you know, and I think that there's a psychological or mental piece to the game that, you know, one of the greatest things American players used to have was their mindset and their competitive drive. And I worry that we're starting to strip that. Our greatest strength as a player that's starting to strip that away.
Yeah, I love that you bring that up. It's a topic we haven't really talked about a whole lot on the podcast, but it's something I've had plenty of conversations about, even just through my days of recruiting as a college coach, is how that landscape has changed and how that passion has, you know, it's just been about, hey, okay, we just got to play this game. What are we actually playing for?
Right.
I'd love to hear kind of your thoughts on that. How is that translating, you know, how's that translating positively or probably negatively to the next level, which is usually the college game when something is on the line every single day? How do you see that mentality being a difficult transition for players, and how are you navigating that as they're transitioning into that next level?
Yeah, I think that we have to spend more time than we ever have coaching, I would say, some of the moments within the game that demand a higher level of intensity. The transition moment, the phase of the game when we don't have the ball, like we spend more time really demanding the choice that we have is to coach it and demand a level of defensive intensity that we are comfortable with, or be okay with a level that's not at the level that we want, which isn't really something that we are interested in here at South Dakota State. But the amount of time that we have to spend with our team on some of those moments has increased over the last 10, 12 years. For us to be really good in those moments, really good without the ball, really good, you know, when the other team has the ball, really good in the moment we lose it, we have to spend more time with video, showing what it looks like when it's done well, showing what it looks like when it doesn't. You know, more time, more training sessions that's devoted to those moments and those phases. And, you know, but the choice that we have is we either do it or we accept a level within our program that's not at the standard that we want to be at.
Yeah. And let me pinpoint something, because we haven't said it, but you've said it. Every example that I think that you just gave was on transition. You said transition, but mainly your points were transition to defense. Most of your points were defensively, the defensive mentality of the game. and this is kind of a hot button for me within the game right now, is I don't know that we're teaching defense at the young levels enough. It's probably easy to get motivated to go score a goal. We get excited about that within the game itself, but maybe we're not excited about the importance of defending. Are we missing something right now in the training of our youth players, just specifically in defending?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think we are. I think we're missing. I think fewer and fewer players have the desire to defend at a high level, whether you're a pressing forward or whether you're, you know, a sophisticated center back who's reading the game. It's the same thing, right? That embraces that part of it from that. And so I do think that we're missing it. And I do think that we're just not emphasizing it enough. At the end of the day, it isn't so much that, you know, you can pick things apart. It's hard to teach defending at a level that translates to the highest level, because there's a lot of nuances. And I tend to give some coaches a little bit of leeway of, like, at the youngest ages, that may not be the highest priority for them. You know, building players' technique and the confidence with the ball, you know, should be the priority of people in the golden age of learning, right? But just demanding a level of effort and intensity in some of those phases, I think, does wonders. You know, one of our everyday objectives here is we want to be the best team in the country in the moment the ball is lost. I think you can control every aspect of that. What does it look like if you're the one that loses it? What does it look like if you're 60 yards from the ball? What's it look like if you're on the sideline, if you're a substitute? But we can choose to embrace that, but I can tell you that it's getting harder and harder for us to even get our team to embrace that at the level that I think the best team in the country looks like in that moment that they lose it, because it takes a level of investment, you know, to do hard things, to do things that you weren't necessarily taught growing up, that are the best parts of the game.
Yeah. Hey, Brock, we would have gotten along very well on the sidelines if we were a staff together, because those were, we built all of our teams back to front. It was defense first. And I do think, you know, a lot of it has to do with, well, I think great goal scorers are very hard to find. So to be in a game, you've got to be great defensively and hope you can score now and again. And maybe you get a great goal score once in your career as a coach. I don't know. I don't know that I had a phenomenal one, but I had some decent ones. So just to be in games, I think defensively, it's there. But back to full circle this whole conversation, this could be its own podcast, and maybe it should be full circle, is when the game's on the line and it means something and it's for something, I think every player is willing to defend a little bit harder when there is something on the line. I think, as like you said, as many games as they're playing right now, a lot of that's being lost. So yeah. That's cool. Mm-hmm. That's been a cool part of the conversation. Phil?
That was so good. And I agree so much. And as a both a parent of players who have gone through already, and, you know, a few years ahead, I have a 22-year-old who played at the high school. She played in the kind of the USYS, where they actually did have the regionals. This will state cup going to regionals. Every game was intense. It was at a different level. And then you go to the nationals and you're playing, you got to go and through the tournament and the semifinals, final. And then go down to my younger age, it's like most of them are showcases now. And you go to a showcase and it's like, oh, well, we lost, you know, or it's very individual based. It's, oh, well, I did well, so that's cool because it was a showcase. And they're even calling it a show. So when you call it a showcase, like, well, we're showcasing, games don't matter. You lose, you win, it doesn't matter. They try to have like a winner at the end, but it's, nine, like with the Vegas one recently, was like eight teams per bracket and somebody won, quote unquote, but you didn't even play everybody. It's just, they're trying right to keep that there, but you can't recreate that when it doesn't have that tournament mentality. And then, you know, even say the Surf Cup, you know, quote unquote, best of the best. Now there's what, four or six or eight deep brackets. It's just, money is what drives it. Like you said, it's capitalism, which is the strength of the country, but it also, in this context, has not only watered it down as far as too many teams, too many levels, too many things, it's just the kids don't even know what it is. And I think it's a combination of, yeah, you have capitalism on one hand side, but then you have the other side of it, whereas we want everyone to feel good about themselves and we don't want mental health issues. And so we're trying to like be where we say, well, no one loses, and that's going to help mental health. That doesn't help mental health because that's not life, right? We're not teaching life skills when we're doing that. And so I've seen it in the, even in the car on the way home. And my daughter, who's very competitive, gets so frustrated because she's like, my teammates don't really care. It's not, it's not only individual, but it's just, there's nothing on the line.
Yeah.
And so that's been a big issue. And then as far as the defensive, that's another thing that, you know, coach in high school, and that's the other cool thing about high school. High school gets bashed a lot, but high school mimics the college game more than anything. You're playing mm-hmm. with your teammates, your school, you're going after it. You actually have league that then goes into a playoff at the end, and you have all it. And I love that side of it because I see the players coming in from the club game and they don't have that winning mentality a lot of the time. And it's so hard to get that into them because we all know that winning teams find ways to win. And when you don't have that winning mentality, you typically find ways to lose. And so it's really an interesting dynamic. I'd like, yeah, like you said, it could be a whole podcast and there could be a series. And I do think I'd love to even go deeper and maybe get back on at some point to go deeper into that. Cause I think that there's so many things we could pull, so many threads we could pull and go a lot deeper.
Phil, I was laughing when you're talking about teaching kids to lose, because I'm doing that with my 7-year-old right now. He's the youngest of four boys, for those of you who don't know. And anytime he's at home, he's losing all the time. So Marcy and I, they're outside playing basketball last night, and we heard some loud bang. And so Marcy started doing the countdown to cry. Okay, I have a crier in 5, 4. Of course, the 7-year-old runs into the house. He threw me to the ground. You know, so yes, teaching kids to lose. My 7-year-old is in it right now, and he is a great loser. To his older brothers, he's learning it. But when he goes to play with kids his own age,
yep,
he stands out as the toughest kid because he's like, oh, well, this yep. is, you know, this is nothing. So anyway, I was laughing while you were talking. That's why, because I went to my 7-year-old learning yeah. the hard lesson of being a loser right now.
Yes, but he's also going after harder competition, right?
And 100%.
And yeah. when, like you said, when he's in that cauldron, he'll know how to rise up. So anyway, there's so much more to that, but I love that you went into that because, yeah, we haven't had someone, we talk about pay to play a lot, but not the kind of implications of it, right? And what that looks like. And so anyway, we, you know, have to bring this to an end because believe it or not, we've been at it for an hour already and, you know, definitely want to start wrapping it up. But we have a couple questions we talk with all our guests about. And the first is, how have you used the lessons you've learned directly from the game of soccer in your relationships outside the game?
Great question. I think in general, I just think the lessons that I've learned is there's value in differences. And so anytime you have a team, you know, you tend to appreciate differences. And so when you start to go into relationships with others or relationships with, you know, partners or friends, valuing that they're different and being comfortable with yourself, if you're the place that's a different mind or different opinion, right? And that's okay. And I think one of the magic things about a team is a team filled with, you know, with different people is a powerful team. And that lesson is carried into a lot of my relationships, as far as that goes.
I totally agree. I think, as I said, even if you had a team of 11 Messis, it'd be a pretty good team, yeah, because the Messi's incredible. But it wouldn't beat most teams out there because right. he's not going to play goalkeeper, and he's not going to play center back, and he's not going to play all the other positions that you need on the field. He could try, but it's not going to. You know, walking around there in some of those positions, that central midfielder isn't gonna do it. But you want Messi on your team, right? But that, and go down the line, some other players couldn't do other things, but to be able to have those differences is not only good, it's critical to have a great team. And so what a great life lesson.
Sure. Brock, last question here for you that we ask everybody. What have you watched, read, or listened to that's most impacted your thinking on how soccer explains life and leadership?
Well, I read a lot. I actually read every day. That's one of my like kind of keystone habits or cornerstone habits. A few books that I would say have been really it, you know, inspirational for me, whether they've hit that at the right time. So I'll give you a few of them. The first one is a book called The Traveler's Gift by Andy Andrews. That was the right book at the right time for me, but there's some great lessons in there. The book that impacted my coaching the most is really 3D Coaching by Jeff Duke. And very specifically, one of the lessons that hit me like a 2x4 across the forehead is, you know, really talking about why as coaches do we correct it with a level of specificity, but when it comes to praising players, that it tends to be generalized. And if you want to build confidence or really permeate your team, why don't we coach or praise players at the same levels of specificity as we tend to correct? And I go all the way back to like the U.S. soccer coaching schools. Like there was a whole like correct way to make a coaching point, right? Like rehearse, which is great, but all of it had to do with correction. And so what do we do with our teams and our players when it goes well? And why do we tend to just go, good job, great job? And if you hit that level of specificity in praise, it's so much more powerful than any sort of correction. And then the last one, it's the one we're reading as a team. We've done it as a team a couple times, is Dr. Henry Cloud, 9 Things He Must Do in Love and Life, is our team, kind of our team leadership book right now from that. And it just really talks about, you know, really what are some of the things that he's observed successful people doing along the way. And so we have weekly group discussions with our team with that book as well.
Well, that's always one of my favorite parts of the show, because we get to get great things that will hopefully gifts that will keep on giving. And I know there's a lot of stuff that we've talked about today that a lot of coaches need to hear, and hopefully are listening, and hopefully will take it to heart. And, you know, especially it always helps when it's coming from a coach who's having a lot of success, and you're having a lot of success on the field, but we know it's because of all the things you're doing off the field. And so that reading is a huge part of it. No doubt. And just great books. Definitely check them out, folks. Thank you so much, Brock. So encouraged by this conversation. I am so glad we were able to do this, because it was great to hear you speak a little bit at the convention, but it was just like a little taste, you know? And so I'm glad that we were able to get to have a conversation, get to know each other a little bit. And hopefully this won't be the last time we have you on. Hopefully we'll be able to get you on in the future and have some deeper conversations with you. I got anything parting words there, Paul?
No, Brock. Yeah, definitely great to finally meet you. Appreciate your time, and really just appreciate what you're doing and how you're doing it, how you're leading those young women, and the impact you're making on your campus day in and day out.
Yeah, and likewise to you guys. I appreciate the conversation. I think there's power in conversation and story, and hearing yours. There's a lot of things that will stick with me, but sharing it with people is making an impact in our game too. So thank you both.
Awesome. Well, folks, thanks again for being a part of this conversation. Thank you for engaging. And we do hope that you're taking what you're learning from this and you're using it. You're using it every day as you go about your days, and you go about your coaching, you go about business, you go about, you know, parenting, whatever you're doing while you're listening to this show. I hope that you're using it in the midst of that. If you want to learn more about Warrior Way, we talked about that a little bit at the outset of the show. I'm sure we'll be going into some of that Costa Rica stuff in future episodes, but you can check it out at warriorwaysoccer.com, and you can also follow on the different social media channels as well. We got some disc stuff, Coaching the Bigger Game. You can check that out, providenceworld.com. It's where you can find out some of the information about those things. Also, coachingthebiggergame.com. All that stuff, everything we've talked about on this show will be in the show notes, and would love to engage with you there. So folks, as always, hope that you're taking all that you're learning from this show and you're using it to help you to be a better coach, a better player, a better spouse, better parent, better in all that you do. And continually remind yourself that soccer does explain life and leadership. Thanks a lot. Have a great couple weeks.